Welcome to the Jazz Shapers podcast from Mishkon Dorea. What you're about to hear was originally broadcast on Jazz FM. However, the music has been cut due to rights issues.
This is Jazz Shapers with Elliot Moss on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkon Dorea. It's business, but it's personal. Listening colour.
Welcome to Jazz Shapers with me, Elliot Moss, bringing the shapers of the business world together with the musicians shaping jazz, soul and blues. My guest today, I'm very pleased to say, is Amanda Thompson, CEO and founder of Thompson & Scott, creators of Naughty, the premium non-alcoholic wine brand. Brought up on a plant-based, no-sugar diet by her health-conscious mother, Amanda's media career, pretty illustrious it was too, TV and radio journalism and presenting for the BBC, ITN and Sky, drew her closer to the world of fine wine and champagne, that sounds good, and in particular to how much sugar and chemicals are so often added. Driven to learn how to make a clean, pure, sparkling wine, Amanda left her job, moved her family to Paris in 2010, and studied for a diploma in wine at the renowned Le Cordon Bleu School, he says in his awful French accent. And in 2016, she launched Thompson & Scott, aiming to create a perfect champagne with minimal sugar and chemicals. 3 years later, in search of greater purity, she founded Naughty, a collection of alcohol-free, low-sugar wines. Disruptor brand Naughty is now B Corp certified and vegan, and sold across the world with a fast-growing footprint in the US, which I think began in Texas. It's great to have you here.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here in your fancy studio.
Very fancy. And you're a journalist, so of course you'd appreciate fancy.
I didn't get fancy much, so it's nice now.
So the beginning of your life, Amanda, has and you've said this and you've written it many places, has defined who you are.
Yeah, I think so. But I actually am unpacking now because I work with Americans and they force me to unpack things. Obviously, naturally, I'm a Brit, so I don't share anything, but I'm working with lots of wonderful Americans, so I'm having to get in touch with my emotional deep side, which has been shocking for me at my age. Anyhow.
What are they getting out of you? What do you
well,
find yourself saying?
Just that I was born confident, despite the fact that my circumstances should have suggested otherwise. So if I'd gone all in on nature nurture when I was a young parent, I would have argued that nurture was like so worth it. Now I would go all in on nature. I think I was born confident and I had a really complicated childhood, but I always knew that I would achieve big things, which for me now to analyse is quite odd.
If we didn't analyse it, though, for a moment, and you talk about how you knew you were going to achieve big things, at what age were you conscious that you were going to achieve big things?
Young, because my parents split up when I was really young, and my mother was highly emotional, and my father was an immigrant and was trying to find his way from Pakistan, and they didn't have more children because of their divorce, so they fell in love through aesthetics. So it was, they worked at an ice cream place together. So it was very much a physical aesthetic relationship. My mother was an English rose. My father wanted to be a pilot. He was very dashing. So it was young love. But their personalities, they were both Taurians. I'm not that big on star signs, but I get a Taurus is stubborn. They were both Taurians. And so perhaps that marriage was fated in the stars. So I brought myself up to some degree from 3, 4. So I remember just my mind sort of being prepared to do things. So I was very independent from very young.
And you were given lots of space to have time to think and to have your own thoughts by the sounds of it.
Well, it wasn't so much a space because we didn't have a lot of money because initially we didn't really have any money.
Or rather lack of attention, I guess, is what I meant.
Yeah, and it wasn't so much nasty lack of attention. It was circumstantial because my mother was trying to work hard to hustle to put food on the table. My father was trying to build his way in the world. Mm. And so I used to have a little grey suitcase and I would go between, I would stay one weekend at my mother's, then my grandmother's, then my father, and then that became my father and stepmother. You know, but it's funny, isn't it, when you reframe things later. But those, the visceral memories I have are just that sense of confidence and independence despite the chaos that surrounded me.
Journalists often like finding out why things are the way they are. They're curious, or they want to fix stuff. They want to write about wrongs that need writing. Where did you fall in? At what point did you go, I need to find out about that, or I need to fix that? At what age did that happen?
I just always remember being curious, so I would ask constant questions. I suppose now in school it's defined as ADHD. You know, I think, you know...
everything's defined as ADHD right now.
And I don't want to, you know, negate the necessity for neurodiverse diagnoses, but I believe there's quite a broad spectrum. And I would say most entrepreneurs are going to be somewhere on the lesser or middle or high section of that if one had ever been analysed. So I suppose constant questions from pretty much coming out of the womb as soon as I could speak.
Amanda Thompson's my business shaper. She is the woman behind Naughty. And in the US, it's called Naughty AF. Is it called Naughty AF there? Is that right?
That's the website, yeah. Alcohol-free, right?
Alcohol-free, absolutely. All the way to the bank and back. I mentioned the word woman. I use that intentionally because the industry you're in doesn't have many women at the helm of businesses.
No.
Is that true? And if it's true, why don't they?
It's boring, actually, in this country. I don't mean I'm bored talking about it. I mean it's boring that we can't move things forward. And actually, while we're on that, it's quite interesting, my relationship with America, because I work between the US and the UK, and I fit in extremely well in American business because I'm a visionary entrepreneur. That's what I've been designated to, as in...
Good title.
I always look at the big picture and how am I going to get there, and I'm extremely ambitious. And sadly, for a number of reasons, those qualities are struggling to break through with women and a more diverse bunch of founders in the UK. And I also think that we've created a system where tall poppy syndrome actually isn't helpful to entrepreneurship, in this country. So there's a lot kind of to unpack. But I guess classic historical journalist, and I want to put my money where my mouth is. I don't have a lot of time, but I'm working with Wellington College and the head of business studies there because they've kindly, put some funding behind it. So we're working now with state schools. I believe you can't be what you can't see, right? So we're starting as young as we can. Because most projects in this country, it's too late, I think. If you're talking to students when they're either sort of pre-university or, if anyone's got kids, they get cynical really quickly. Kids get cynical younger and younger now. So Wellington College starts age 13. So, if you get them then... and actually just start to have them think about profit with purpose, think about leadership, think about entrepreneurship and the intersectionality, and really grassroots. So, the big part of it is we start out, we give them a very small pot of seed funding and they have to try to grow it in a very literal sense, whether that be car boot sales, whatever. And we get them really used to that concept of failure and unpack what that means. Because, of course, failure to most people has such negative connotations. And it's like, if you get kids used to the idea that failure isn't actually what they think it is, and it's a muscle that you can exercise, you can really actually transform their thought process to some degree across the course of a year, we've found. So that's what I'm working on alongside trying to grow a global business right now.
I don't think you're busy enough. And as you were talking earlier, I thought, yeah, your brain works really slowly, Amanda. I mean, just really slowly. So but the serious point I want to make about the speed of your brain and those questions. When you were a journalist, did you sense that this was just one part of your journey in life rather than the end point?
No, not at all. I loved newsrooms. I really loved newsrooms. I think truthfully, I might have loved to have stayed in hard news. I only ever was there briefly and accidentally. I think that my personality is quite big and I always had a big smile and I was quite demonstrative with my hands, and none of that lends itself, I guess, to hard news. It just doesn't come across well on TV. And the other thing was that I loved radio, and my editors in the old days, I'm half Asian, and I was really early in sort of Asian mixed race broadcasting, as in, I was... I guess way before the Michelle Husseins of the world. And, and I'm not for a moment suggesting I would have had that career trajectory in hard news, because that was never where I was going to end up for, a number of reasons. I didn't have the brain for that. But I think that, no, actually, I loved radio. I absolutely loved it. And everyone kept trying to stick me on TV.
I love radio too, and luckily you're here with me, and it's Jazz Shapers, and she's going to be coming back again. That's Amanda Thompson, my business shaper, in a couple of minutes. Right now, though, we're going to hear a taster from the Michigan Academy Digital Sessions, which can be found on all the major podcast platforms. Michigan Derez's Emily Knight talks to Charlotte Young, a fund manager at Troy Asset Management, about why women historically invest less than men and what's being done to change it.
The Michigan Academy Digital Sessions.
Conversations on the legal topics affecting businesses and individuals today.
Clearly, it's so important for firms to actively scrutinise their recruitment processes for elements of unconscious bias and the kind of knock-on effect which that has. How do you think firms can actively encourage diversity when recruiting?
Yeah, this is a great question. And from my perspective, the way to do this is you need a diverse pipeline is first. So you need to have really good breadth of candidates. That's just key. And then the people who are doing the interviewing and making the decisions, make sure that there's representation from all across the firm, even if that involves bringing in someone more junior who might not normally be involved in the interview process. Ask them what they think and make sure that they're involved. There are some great studies. There's a book called Noise, which basically talks about if you want to make the best decisions, often actually a group conversation first isn't the best. So you've done your interview, you're having a debrief. Maybe before you all get into a room and start doing groupthink where, you know, the most senior person who perhaps is the stereotypical white male fund manager, maybe just before you get into that room, just take a straw poll of what everyone thinks independently. And then you really make sure that the reservations that the junior analyst had, but she's a little bit too sort of cautious to make in front of everyone else, make sure that those reservations are documented. And I think then, yeah, you come to a much better decision.
The Mishcon Academy Digital Sessions. To access advice for businesses that is regularly updated, please visit mishcon.com. Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishcon de Rea. It's business, but it's personal.
You can enjoy all our former Business Shapers, lucky you, on the Jazz Shapers podcast. And you can hear this very program again if you pop Jazz Shapers into your very own personal favourite podcast platform. My guest there is Amanda Thompson, CEO and founder of Thompson & Scott, creators of Naughty, the premium non-alcoholic wine brand. So this gentleman, Alexandre Penet.
Penet,
good. Thank you. He was your man in 2010 in Paris. They must have looked at you, and I want to talk about this theme of disruption, and gone, there's this person that wants to do something different with champagne. Why would she want to do that? That doesn't fit. Please stop.
Yeah, I mean, but then I think that now I look back, macro has really defined my life. And I think that what I've always tried to tell people is that if you're going to do something really different, then mostly people will be negative initially because I don't know if it scares them. Probably. I think that anything, particularly an industry like the wine business, and you know, let's take that because that's the one we're talking about specifically, it's steeped in history. And I've always seen great winemakers as artists. I was always a wine nerd. I still am a wine geek. I mean, for me, great wine is actually great art. So that's a whole other podcast I won't be invited on. But but the point being, I think, that I was never
welcome
afraid.
Welcome to the podcast on, what did you call it?
Wine as Art.
Wine as Art. This has gone slightly left of centre, but we don't mind because we're very flexible here on Jazz Shapers.
But to get back to the point, I think that you can't be afraid to realise that if you're making people uncomfortable, you might be doing something really big.
Well, this is, I look through your life and I think she took the family to Paris. She stopped being a journalist, having interviewed Tom Cruise and various other famous people. That just wasn't enough. She decides to disrupt the industry. I think you like discomfort a lot. Is that true?
No, I don't love discomfort. What I love is that little bite point when you realise that you have a lot of white space to do something in the world that's going to matter. So historically, I was always focused on social injustice. And I mean, any sort of inequity, I find deeply frustrating. And I'm also aware that talk is cheap. And so when I see white space where I can make a huge difference, that is where I think I get really excited. And now I know when I'm long gone and dead, my legacy will be that I made the world a better place. Anytime anyone had a bottle of Naughty, they're making a health choice without thinking about it. And for me, that is huge, literally huge. That's game-changing in the world. So that is what I find exciting.
Again, I've watched a few interviews of yours and you bemoan the fact that people forget that the industry is all about taste. It's about the liquid. How have you got into, because one thing being a wine geek, very different when you get into the manufacturing, the creation and the art of creating wine. How have you become good at this?
Well, I think it was my training at Cordon Bleu. In fact, it was, because blind tasting was my sport. And those, you know, I don't know if any of you listeners have, you know, just watched those sort of documentaries or films, whatever, and you go through all the steps with wine and whatever. And for me, it actually fit my personality beautifully, studying wine in France, because it was a romantic thing and a cerebral thing, tasting. It wasn't this whole kind of, how's the acidity? Is it medium, medium plus? I mean, you know, I would make the world's worst master of wine. I know some of them. They're marvellous. It's a bit like law and tort, right? I'd make a terrible lawyer because I couldn't remember all the facts. So I can't remember anything, but I've got an amazing palate. I have learned. So going back to my obsession with taste, and I always say to anyone who asks me what's come into, as we say in America, the beverage space, you know, it's liquid, beverage, drink, wine, taste. I think that we get a bit carried away in the modern world with marketing first, marketing. And then I would say, isn't marketing just sales? And then, you know, all the marketing teams around the world get upset. But liquid, yeah. I mean, how can that not be everything initially if you're creating a drink?
So marrying the romantic, the cerebral, and then going into the technical, where you actually go, so now, and I know your first kind of go was no sugar, and that there's that adventure over there with Skinny, and then we move on.
That was champagne.
Champagne. But then the next thing is then saying no alcohol, but I still want it to taste brilliant, because this is the Body Shop insight, which is it may well be good for you, but if it isn't efficacious, forget it. It's the equivalent in wine, which is it's got to taste brilliant. How deep have you gone into the chemistry of all this?
So I go deep in the sense that I work with makers that do their thing brilliantly, as I did with my champagne maker, the same.
Is so, the journalist in you pushing for, I'm going to find the person who really is the best at this, or do you trust?
Once I build a relationship, I'm extremely loyal. So if I find someone who's great at something, and they keep being great at something, I'll stick with them. But equally, I'm always looking to innovate. So it's not a game of how can we shuffle the cards. Ultimately, of course, if I've got a B Corp certified company, I shouldn't technically ship wine around the world. So Rome wasn't built in a day. So obviously, America's my biggest market. You know, one might guess at some point I might collaborate with an American producer, right? So it's not, it's really finding the right people that I can grow with. And so going back to your original question, I think that what most people looking in miss about successful founders and entrepreneurship is, I would argue, most of us have an extremely high level of self-awareness and we go, what are we good at? Right, I'm visionary, I'm great at palate, loads of other things I'm horrendous at. So how do I fill in all of my gaps to have brilliant people around me who are great at all those things? And that is how I believe you create successful founder-led businesses. You know, it's not as if, as a founder, you can be amazing at everything. And I'm often shocked that some founders try to be, because you never can be, right? Life's really short. You can't be amazing at everything. It's just not possible, right?
Unfortunately, true. Final chat with my guest, Amanda Thompson, coming up. And we've got some music from the wonderful Snarky Puppy. That's in just a moment. Don't go anywhere.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkondareya. It's business, but it's personal.
I am with Amanda Thompson just for a few more minutes. The big thing for me is changing habits. And I lived in India many years ago, and we were trying to change people's habits with regard to washing clothes and moving them from scrubbing and using all the implements that in India were very common, and even in the 90s and probably in the noughties, moving them to washing machines. And everyone talked about the habits change program. In this context, the habits change program is pretty big. The normalization of a non-alcoholic wine, which tastes good, as well as the alcoholic wine and just switching at certain points and all that. How do you crack that nut? Because the problem with being early is that you're early, and the problem with being late is everyone else is doing it. Where does that sit with you?
I think that for me, it's about the integrative piece. And because we've never fought in the no-low space, we say we're a wine brand that's non-alcoholic. We take an agnostic position to alcohol. There's no fight that I need to have. So it's, if we think about any habits and why we rail against them, it's usually because we can't get our heads around them, and there's often something negative in our minds about them. So I've almost eliminated all of that kind of stress. It's like, just see, try it if you like it.
So you're a lover, not a fighter.
Right. And I think that there's so much anger in the world, isn't there? You know,
Don't get me started.
Right. And everything's so binary. And we're completely not binary. And everyone's like, oh, my God, you still drink wine, Amanda. Thank God. And I'm like, you know, do what you like. But we're here to blend into your everyday drinking seamlessly. Just see if it tastes good.
Is that how you run your life, Amanda, do you think? Are you an integrative type of person? In other words, you do go with the flow? Because again,
no, I've got extremely strong opinions, but I'm also heartbroken that most of the interesting bits of life for me happen in the grey, and we've lost the art of debate and, you know, conversation when we disagree on things, because we all stick in our homogenous worlds. So I'm going to let everybody fight it out about not out this and that and the other, and investors all want to pile into my business. It's great that I don't need the money. But I don't need to have any of those public fights, because I'm just doing what I'm doing, which is building the world's first premium non-alcoholic wine, Naughty, that will become a household name. So I'm very singular about that. So that fight, I don't care for.
And that focus that you have from a business sense, is that the focus that you're comfortable with when you're not working? I mean, do you not work?
Not really. And that's a different podcast and a different problem. But most founders...
No, I mean, listen, that's not... Yes, it's a common...
Most founders who are successful at a certain level, yeah, they'll have the thing they tell you privately versus publicly. So no, and this is why when I'm talking to new entrepreneurs and I'm mentoring people, I always say, what do you want to achieve? And they say to me, what do you mean? And I say, I want a household name that when I'm long gone, people will remember, and I want to change the world. Now, not everybody has to do that, right? If you want to have a lifestyle business that puts food on the table and feeds your kids, brilliant. All of the above are relevant. The sacrifices I will be making, if we're going to put them in inverted commas as sacrifices, are going to be much more drastic than the ones if you want to build a lifestyle business and have a side hustle.
And I guess just before I ask you your choice of music, before I let you disappear, my sense of you is you're compelled to want to change the world. This isn't a choice in a way.
Yeah, I mean, not in like a dark sort of way.
No, of course.
But in a really positive way. I think that the further on the journey I get, I'm extremely competitive, extremely. And the hilarious bit of that is I'm often bad at things. So I'm competitive even at things I'm bad at. So I'm terrible at tennis, but I will be furious that I don't win, but I can't really play.
You've got to follow through. Your head's not down when that forehand happens. I know it already, Amanda.
My tennis coach once said to me, I once had one, and he's like, Amanda, I really like you, but I feel like I'm wasting, you know, you're giving me all this money. I feel like I'm not, your hand eye sucks. So that, you know, yeah, I now know what I'm capable of with this business. And so that's when it becomes even more exciting and you double down even harder.
It's been great chatting to you. Thank you so much for being so open.
Pleasure.
Just before I let you go, what's your song choice and why have you chosen it?
Well, this song, we've gone deep. We haven't done the fun stuff. This was Cannes. This was Cannes Film Festival. I met my husband at the Cannes Film Festival. That's definitely another podcast. And this is before social media. This was a classic track. Quentin Tarantino, a Dusty Springfield. I mean, what a moment.
Dusty Springfield with the iconic Preacher Man, the song choice of my business shaper today, Amanda Thompson. She talked about if you're doing something different, then the chances are it will be negatively perceived, and that's not a bad thing. White space, that's where she gets excited, the chance to do something where there's space to do it. A high level of self-awareness is critical. Be clear what you're good at and get people to do the things that you're not good at. And I love this, the sense that she's now aware after all these years of what she is capable of, and it makes her want it even more. Brilliant stuff. That's it from Jazz Shapers. Have a lovely weekend.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM.
In partnership with Mishkondareya.
It's business, but it's personal.
We hope you enjoy that edition of Jazz Shapers. You'll find hundreds more guests available for you to listen to in our archive. To find out more, just search Jazz Shapers in iTunes or your favourite podcast platform, or head over to mishkon.com/Jazz Shapers.